I'm Amy.
I'm Delia.
And I'm Wendell. And welcome to
Yes
But
Why
Podcast. Yeah.
So, Kelsey, to introduce you to this lovely space, we're in the location of the studio is in a studio where there are lots of bands. So you're going to hear bands because it's not soundproof.
I love it.
I really enjoy it. I've had a lot of guests react weirdly to it.
They should grow up.
Well, sometimes, right now, it sounds great because down one of the hallways, they're playing like electronic music. I don't know if you can hear
it's
it,
like
Wendell.
It's like a nice little synth.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, actually. It's enjoyable what's happening right now. Whereas sometimes there's a band that's in the room right next to us, and they just play sometimes the same song over and over. But they're rehearsing, you know, that's what you do. But, you know, it'll get a little like, okay. Or there'll be like a drum solo. I remember when we had Matt Needles on, he was kind of like, whoa, this is intense. And it was like, it's okay, don't worry.
They'll pass.
They're just, they'll stop. Oh, also, there's
Don't bother the Counting Crows.
Yeah, that's our running joke, is that it's secretly the Counting Crows, and that someday someone will edit out all of our talking just so they can hear the Counting Crows album.
Hell yeah. That'd be a fantastic little surprise. And then, what's his name? Fuck, what's the guy's name?
No idea.
Old Dreads.
It'd be a fantastic surprise for them.
Comes in through the door. Yeah, you're right. He's not busy. But he dated Jennifer Aniston. He's fine.
Oh, well, you know, Jennifer Aniston, she really likes interesting
things. In the 90s. Yeah, he was fine.
Wait, the guy from Counting Crows?
Yeah, dude.
Right on.
Yeah, so everyone has a chance with Jennifer Aniston is what we're learning.
Man, she's just all over the place. Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
Stays busy.
All right,
let me... Jennifer Aniston. Hey, at least we get the Friends reference out of the way.
There you go.
Oh!
Kind
of. Exactly. Staple of this podcast.
Oh, yes, but why? I didn't mean it. I was actually going to write down the time after to edit after that, but you know what? I'm going to make a note that says edit start right at Counting Crows reference.
Perfect.
Because I will like cut out all our like blah, blah, blah at the beginning.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Awesome. And then let's call it 7:20. So thank you, Kelsey, for being with us on the podcast.
Thank you, Amy and Wendell. R.I.P. Delia.
She's not dead. But Delia is no longer a host with the podcast.
Not yet, she's not.
She's not dead. We haven't killed her. No, she's moving to Chicago.
Yes.
So, for the time being, she took the time off to spend all of her time with, you know, all the peeps of Austin.
Yeah. It's a lot of work to move.
It is, and a lot of work to say goodbye to a community that you've spent some time with, which, if I understand, are you moving to L.A.?
I am. That's what I'm telling people. I'm telling them out loud so that I will do it.
Okay.
It's something I wanted to do for 15 effing years.
Yeah.
In varying degrees of intensity. So I'm finally doing it this January.
Yeah.
It's exciting. It's one of those where if you are... any way tangential to the entertainment industry and you say you're moving to LA, then that implies like, oh, I'm going to go to try to make it big. And there's sort of layers of that, but it's more just like, I got to go so that I don't have this thing, this like little regret / what if thing in my head. I honestly don't care if I am successful. I just want to get it over.
Well, sometimes I think too, it's good for you to jump into a bigger pond. You know what I mean? If you're a big fish this is a small pond. If you, you know, grew from a guppy to all of a sudden now you're a big fish, and I would consider you quite a big fish in this small pond.
Thank you.
So it seems right. It seems like a good time to go, and then you'll be a small fish again and figure out that kind of thing. I mean, the market there is so much huger.
Yeah.
And so, and there's so many different things you could do. And I think, interestingly, all the different projects that you've worked on here will help you kind of make decisions as far as, like, what projects you want to take.
Absolutely. This pond is so cozy and just fertile. Is that a good way to describe it?
Yeah, I guess so. There's a lot going on, for sure.
There's a lot happening, and there's a lot of opportunities, and I haven't exhausted the scene here by any means, but just being able to try on so many different things and get so much stage time and get so many opportunities because of the nature of Austin and the comedy scene, that's been wonderful. So many like learning opportunities and leveling up. Whereas, you know, maybe if I had been in, you know, New York or LA right away, I would have just gotten disheartened by not being able to try anything.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think it's important to have a place where you can do a bunch of things mm-hmm. before you try to, like, you know, go to a big place where they're actually going to be like, so what's your resume yeah. look like? And now you have a legit resume with, like, you know, acting work and teaching work and directing work and, you know, film work. And I think that in and of itself gives you a wide berth of opportunities you can do in LA.
Yeah, sure. I'm excited.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about you today because, you know, I'm thinking about the interview before we mm-hmm. before we start. And
very professional.
Oh, yes, I'm very professional. I was talking to somebody about the Nerdist podcast uh-huh. and Chris Hardwick. And I really like Chris Hardwick because he's, like, about 10 years older than me, mm-hmm. but he feels like he's always still learning, and mm-hmm. I always really appreciate that. Because it's like, he'll have a new opportunity and be like, oh my God, guys, guess what I get to do now? Mm. And it's like, I love how excited you yeah. are. But also, similar or in that vein, he has a school. Like, he has a school in LA that he runs. And I just feel like
it would be
like an improv place.
Okay.
Yeah, it's called the Nerdist School in LA, and it's like in reality, like, it's where most of the current, like, movers and shakers of comedy are. Like, yeah, UCB, great in New York, it's got a lot of stuff going for it, but at this point, like, UCB is, like, just overrun with, like, just, I don't know.
You get saturated. There's
yeah.
Anytime, like, anything, whether it's like a improv, you know, place or what, but if it becomes mainstream name recognition, then necessarily it's gonna get real crowded.
Plus there's all those people who, like we've discussed the difference between people who, like, want to do this because they love doing it and people who are like, well, I'm gonna be famous someday. And I feel like in LA it's gonna be like the weight of all the people who are like, I just want to be a star.
Yeah, I mean,
it's gonna be huge.
I don't want to, like, sit talk outside of my sorry, that's jacket noise. No, well, the one of the things I have heard about the LA improv scene is a lot of, like, actors that are doing it because it looks good on a resume to say that, like, you have improv skills, but less of the, like, pure, I'm doing this kind of comedy because that's the light of my life.
Yeah. But because of that, I know a few friends who actually go to the Nerdist School, and they're very pure in their, like, love of theater and stuff like that.
That's great.
And, you know, people like Jonah Ray, you know, and Kumail Nanjiani mm-hmm. are, like, part of that scene. And, like, you know, all the podcasts that are under the Nerdist head, like, those people are, like, will be the major comedians in, like, 10 years.
Yeah.
If not, like, they kind of are, but not everybody knows who they are.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, in a minute, it'll be like, everybody will know. You know, mm-hmm. like, Pete Holmes' show is just coming out, mm-hmm. and then Kumail's just making a movie. So it's like, all of these people who, like, you kind of know, mm-hmm. but then all of a sudden, they're going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And, you know, like, I was just talking today about how excited I was when I saw TJ Miller in Deadpool.
Yeah.
I was like, dude!
What?
It was just like, oh my God, you probably signed for, like, a 5-picture deal because that's what happens with Marvel! Like, you know, but little things like that.
Yeah.
You know, so, anyway, I feel like he's got a good crowd, and I just thought, if you're going to go there, I'd throw that out there that, like, hey, you'd be good, and I don't know what the teaching scene is, but, you know, you've been a great leader to a bunch of sketch peeps for a while, so, you know,
thank you.
That'd be an interesting path to get going in.
Yeah, I'm super interested in all that kind of stuff. Part of the moving is, like, something I've been dealing with for the past several years with my creative life is specializing and narrowing down the focus, because I've for my whole life sort of felt like highly adaptable and kind of whatever I focus on that I think I can do well, because I am a hard worker when I try to be. So the last couple of years have been a lot of trying different things and getting a feel for not just, you know, what do I like to do, what am I good at, how do I marry those kinds of things. And with the move,
that's tough.
Goddamn, rent is so expensive that I'm like, well, that's going to be a lot of my life just paying to exist there.
Sure.
And knowing that I will probably have to narrow down from what I've been doing in Austin because I've had my hands on a lot of different things. And yeah, it's just I wanna keep doing everything. It's just a matter of like hours in a day.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Are you from Austin, Chelsea?
I'm not. I was a military brat, so I moved around. I moved almost every year or two until I hit middle school. And then I was in San Antonio for middle school and a couple years of high school. I graduated early because I was like, high school sucks. I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
And then I went to film school, and then I graduated film school and got disheartened from that and started trying to pursue more like a mainstream, like, for some reason I thought I would wanted to do PR because it seemed like a responsible creative job.
Sure.
But I remember I went to a couple of semesters of community college before transferring to UT, and my philosophy professor, he would have like out of class required meetings where you have to like go and talk about philosophy. And there was one time where I was like the last person at this group, and he like sat next to me, and like his fucking knees were touching. And this man's like was like 40 years older than me at the time, and his like knees were touching me, and he was like, "So what do you want to do?" I was like, "I don't know. I think I want to do PR." And he's like, "You've got a great face for that." And I was just like, "No, thank you."
Boom.
No, thank you. And that little incident's not. I mean, there's a lot that's not great about that. But PR is a very interesting field. It can be done well and it can be valuable, but there's a lot of, you know, I'm uncomfortable with like making things that are terrible seem not terrible.
Yeah.
I don't know, I'm not crazy about that.
Yeah.
So.
Also, I really just feel like a lot of people force themselves to dumb down their creative pursuits because they think they need to make money in some way. Mm-hmm. And I really think it's just a matter of like, A, figuring out how you can live as cheaply as you possibly can, and then also, like, figuring out some other job that... I truly believe if you need a day job, that day job should have nothing to do with creativity.
Yeah.
Because I really feel like, number one, there needs to be people that do all sorts of different kinds of jobs, but also, like, if you are creative in your day job, you're going to exhaust all the possible art that you could make for your own self.
Absolutely.
And for other things. So, like, when you sit down to write your screenplay or whatever, it's not going to be as strong as it could be if your job is you writing other things.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because you've wasted all of that energy trying to, like, figure out how to sell somebody some, like, maxi pads or
Absolutely.
Whatever.
And that's something that, like... internally, I sort of felt might happen, and then eventually I got so far off the path that it didn't matter. But that was the concern, was am I going to burn out my creative energy on trying to, like, accomplish something for someone else's goals rather than my own or whatever I'm trying to do.
Yeah.
I've been doing, like, a customer service job for a couple of years, and even that comes up where it's, like, catching yourself getting really upset or invested in some issue in your day job that just derails your like extracurricular creative pursuits.
Yeah.
I guess dream scenario. I don't expect to get paid for doing my favorite things. It would be nice.
Well, I mean, not right away.
Yeah.
But, I mean, moving to L.A. is certainly a good path to getting to the point where you're being paid for it, because of all the cities, it's certainly the one where there's the most opportunities for getting paid to do it. I mean, you could stay in Austin your whole life and do theater forever and never get a dollar for it.
That's true.
Whereas, you know, at a certain point, you know, if you do improv at any one of the theaters, some agent's going to contact you and be like, hey, do you want to try to do this? And if you do, then you can try to start making money doing acting or, though if you wanted to continue to do like, directing and stuff, what is your thing? Cause you were like, I'm trying to hone what it is that I want to do and what I'm good at. So what do you think your like path is?
I think, it's hard because the creative force and the creative impulse is almost like the broadest thing that anything, you know, like we tend to pigeonhole creative pursuits into, like, painting and acting and, mm-hmm. and dance, or, you know, these couple of, like, categories. But the like, actual source, the force behind it is, like, at least from my perspective, like, the universal need to create meaning and pursue love. Like, the, mm-hmm. they're very broad. It's a very broad impetus that makes you be creative. So, and I think, I do think that all people are creative, because I think that's, you know, if we're made in God's image, it's because of our creative. If anybody's seen Westworld, check it out.
Haven't yet heard it. Heard it had its season finale last night, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I did a podcast for that last night. But so I think creativity is like the need to breathe or move your body now and then. Like, it's not a particular thing. So I've dabbled a heck of a lot in my over the years. Film has always been was probably like the first thing that I like mentally committed to as like a 12-year-old. Like, I will be a director. That's what I want to do. I do find that I like, as far as film and video, I love the story and creating that and taking care of that. And so there's different ways that you can help manage that or be in charge of that. I love writing, I love directing, and I love editing. And those are sort of the highest creative control in the mid-production and post-production phases. I like writing, I like coming up with the stuff, but then there's that, like, need to see it through and make sure that it gets taken care of or gets somewhere where it's seen. Directing, I love it. I like shooting. I like the challenge of figuring out how to make the thing. Since I was really young, I would always make short videos and stuff with my friends or by myself, and learned a lot of skills just out of the necessity of, like, no one else, I can't get anyone else to do this for me, so I have to figure out. I have to figure out how to use this camera, I have to figure out how to edit, I have to figure out how to, like, do all parts. And that kind of doing all parts, jack of all trades, like, being that flexibility to fall into different roles, that's always been very exciting and stimulating for me. And then post-production, I just love editing because you have so much control over how something reads.
Yeah.
To answer your question, one of the narrowing focuses going forward is probably focus on writing, directing, or editing. Those three things in any combination sound good to me. I just finished assistant directing on Call Me Brother, which was directed by David Howe and written by Christina Parrish, and I felt like that was a good role for me, because it's, you have to be paying attention to everything that's going on, you have to manage different people and personality types. That role is so much about just, like, getting the thing done, and I like that, because it's, I like creative problem solving, I like trying to figure out any scale of problem, like, there's a shadow on this person's face, or we need to figure out how to get it to look like it's snowing outside and it's July. What should we do? That's always the most fun. And then, of course, like, working with a team, that's the other, like, huge appeal of film making, is, like, it's a group sport. The last couple of years in Austin, I've mostly been focusing on live performance, which is something I never expected myself to do. Like, mm-hmm. when I was littler, I would do short videos, and I would be in stuff, but it was more a matter of necessity of, like, I'll do it because I can't, like, pay anyone to do it, mm-hmm. or I'd feel uncomfortable asking anyone to do these weird things. but I never viewed myself as a performer. But now I'm like, ooh, that instant gratification, so good. I love it. Like, since getting into improv at the New Movement and performing, having just so much more stage time and doing Bad Example, we did a sketch show every week for a year and a half. Just getting those reps, like, I love the live stuff. There's nothing like that.
Yeah, there is something great about it. No, not a dollar in it, but really good for the old ego, for sure. Yeah, I feel like it's a good way, especially if you move, it's a good, it could be a good way to make friends.
Yeah,
absolutely. You know what I mean? Like, and then also to meet people and find out what the deal is, because I feel like the business deal in LA is way different, and I don't totally understand what that is yet, and I'm hoping somebody can tell me at some point. Like, we have some interviews coming up in the next couple of weeks that are people that are like, live in New York and LA, and I really just want to be like, okay, so how do you get done what you do?
Yeah.
Because I don't know how to do all that stuff. Like, I know how to get it done here. Though, to be honest, I'm impressed with Call Me Brother and would love to hear more about it, because it's like, I don't actually know how to get that done.
I can't begin to, like, articulate what a wonderful experience it's been, and just eye-opening, and it's just such an example of how you just need a collection of motivated people with an idea that they believe in to get anything done. Like, that was my first feature film to work on, other than Amanda Bynes, Sydney White. I was an extra on that for 2 days. But, no, so Call Me Brother just came about. It was Christina's idea. She wrote a short film, showed it to David Howe. David Howe was like, this has legs. She expanded it out to a feature. A couple people were, I was originally planning on moving mid-November, and then was talking to David and Christina about how they were shooting this feature, and I was like, I will absolutely stay for that. We're gonna feature here, because I'm not gonna get a feature in LA anytime soon.
It's a good experience to have on your resume, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've worked with both of them before in different capacities, and I respect the hell out of their instincts are just phenomenal, and it's just a joy to work with them. So I stuck around for that, and then it was such a short turnaround from the... They got a producer, David Buckstein, on board, who went to school with David Howe, and I think it was maybe... He came on, they did the Kickstarter, and the Kickstarter was up for 2 weeks, and then... I think a week later we started shooting. Mm-hmm. So it was like, from between Buckstein, the producer, getting on board and shooting, it was like less than a month. It was fast. So
I can't even believe you guys are done. I saw you posted it was done. I was like, what?
Yeah, it was insane. And everybody was saying how it should have been shot over 3 weeks, but we did it in two.
Sure. So it was everyone has day jobs.
Yeah. And, I'm fine with just having a real tough 2 weeks, 12-plus-hour days at least.
Sure.
It was an amazing experience, but it was one of those where everything about it just worked out, and it makes you feel like the universe is conspiring to facilitate this thing getting made.
Yeah.
So between, like, donations and contributions and people just popping up, there's a lot of good stories of people that were working on, like Nathaniel Hendricks. He just had a internal inkling to leave his job, and he did. And then a couple days later, this popped up, so he ended up being art director on a feature film just because he put some faith into the universe. And then, it was just an incredible experience. It was exactly what it's surreal, because it's like, I feel like I'm still trying to move towards higher plateaus of like career and creativity, but this milestone was so significant, because not only just like working on a feature film, but a project that, like, I got a little paid, but I would have probably ended up doing it for nothing, because I just, you know, so many of us just wanted to create this thing.
Yeah.
And just believe in the people involved. And, the cast was so effing talented, it's stupid.
Oh, absolutely. That trailer they put on the Kickstarter was better than half the movies I've watched this year. I was like, oh my God, I need to see this movie. Someone help them make it.
Yeah, there's a couple people that said that they... Like, it was because of that trailer. They were like, this is something else.
I mean, it was as good as, like, Dazed and Confused. I watched that movie, like, on the regs, okay? Mm-hmm. And when I watched that trailer, I was like, oh, my God. I mean, it was... I wanted to be like, dear Richard Linklater, check out this because this is what you were trying to do with Dazed and Confused. Like, oh my God, it just had such energy to it and fun. Yeah. And I was like, if the movie is anything like this, and I'm sure it will be,
so good. Just like I was assistant directing, so I had technically required very minimal creative input. Mm-hmm. It's more of like a managerial position. But there's like little Easter egg things I got to be creative on, like, we need more child's drawings on this wall, so I got to do that. But just watching it be made, like holding back laughter to not ruin the take. I'm just like, I can't wait to see the final product. Yeah. Everyone in it is just phenomenal. Dismukes? You seen this kid? Jeez. He's so talented. And he was like, I have no acting training, but like...
He was like, I've never seen him act.
Killed it. Yeah. It was amazing. And just the experience of like getting to... So the first 6 days of production were at Christina's grandmother's house in Crockett, Texas, which is exactly a 3-hour drive from Austin. And Billy Rose, Grandma Billy Rose, she was so gracious to let us use her home as the like home space, because the most of the story is like a family drama. And so we had to like, it was almost like camping, because there were like, we had limited beds, but like 10 or 12 crew. We had to, a handful of us had to sleep in the second story of a barn on the property. Which was very novel. It was so delightful. Like, beautiful country stars. You can see the sky. And then she breeds dogs. So there's all these, like, beautiful Malamutes in the backyard that are just, like, these wolf dogs.
Wow.
It was fantastic.
Did the dogs make it into the movie?
I don't think they did.
That's amazing.
They made it into our hearts.
They made it into our hearts. That's beautiful.
And then we ended up shooting the rest in Austin, and it was still long days, but I don't know, just Austin's a great town.
Yeah, it is.
Everybody's so damn sweet.
It's true. It's true. If people are mean to you in LA, you just give us a call, we'll say nice things to you.
Yeah, no, I've only heard that everybody in LA is just super nice.
It's true, actually. I have heard that a lot.
I've heard they're nice. I've heard they're superficially nice.
Like, I've always wanted to hate LA, but I just keep getting all this information that makes me feel super uninformed.
Well, I think the human beings that like are trying to do the same thing are nice human beings, but the business is a little more cutthroat. And so that's the part that sort of rips you down a little bit, but it's like, I'm sure you can find pals that support you no matter what you're doing. I mean, everyone that I know that lives, like my personal friends that live in LA are all the nicest people.
Yeah.
I mean, hell, all the people we mutually know are the nicest people. So it's like... I can't imagine, you know, that the rest of them... I mean, I'm sure there's dick bags everywhere.
There's dicks everywhere. Let's not forget.
Yeah, it's like, Jeff Whitaker is not like a hollow shell of a man like I thought he would be, so that's good.
Right, yeah, he's a nice dude.
He's a nice guy.
Yeah, I love that guy.
He maintains that positivity, and I think that's a good sign.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, good stuff.
Oh, that's funny. Well, look, I'm excited that you're moving forward on this kind of thing. I think it should be a great adventure. I'm totally, like, psyched to hear what happens and how it works out. And, you know, like I said, though, I mean, the community here is still always got your back no matter what. So if you're, like, sitting there feeling like, I don't know if I can do this, just give us a call. And I'm sure we'll be like, are you kidding me? You can do this. You're the best. These horrible people that are telling you not to. Because, I mean, there is a significant amount of competition, you know, and competition can breed meanness for sure. But the one thing, since I am personally about to, like, have a child, I've been thinking a lot about, like, how to explain to that person what the world's like. Because the world's a little messed up, right? Mm-hmm. So... I'm actually kind of pleased. I'm having a boy.
Oh.
And I'm pleased that I'm having a boy. I know, I thought that too.
Because it's easier to...
There's that. But also, like, you know, when boys tend to get bullied or be bullied a little bit more often than girls, for instance. And so you kind of have to deal early on with the, like, why would a person act that way?
Yeah.
And it occurred to me that, like, go ahead, Wendell, you say it?
No, I was just going to say, you got to get the combat training in early.
Well,
you're doing a thing. Yeah.
Well, it's not just that, but yes, definitely, like, prepare yourself for, like, any physical situation, but even as a younger kid, if somebody's mean, it's like, it's just because they're sad.
Yeah, everybody is awful because of some kind of injury they think they've experienced or have.
Yeah.
You know, it's like trauma begets trauma.
Yeah, exactly. So in the same way, if there's some actor or some director that treats you like shit, it's purely because they're a sad person who feels like they didn't get something that they should have gotten or whatever. So no matter where you go or how that works, like, because I've been thinking about how to explain this to a person. So, like, in this conversation of, like, LA is going to be a little bit rougher, but that's okay because you just acknowledge that when they're mean to you, you're just like, I'm really sorry for whoever hurt you.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep trying. You go ahead and be sad however you need to be.
Yeah, absolutely.
But
so many people there are nice and, like, because, you know, especially between, if you compare, like, L.A. to New York, like, the stereotype would be L.A. people are so nice and New York people are mean, but they're just cold.
I think they're just further apart.
Yeah. It's fine.
I lived in New York for a long time and people were very nice to me there.
Yeah, I think it's just, it's different cultures, different ways of, like, processing and what social things are considered polite and helpful and what's, you know, normal.
Also, I think, like, physical space matters. Like, LA is a beautiful location.
It's a driving town.
It's wide open spaces, right? Not Texas wide open spaces. Yeah. But at the same time, it's like, you have to drive to get anywhere. If you have a friend, you might live very far away from them.
Mm-hmm.
There's just a wide swath. I don't think anyone lives in downtown LA. Everyone lives in the surrounding areas, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in New York, everyone lives super close together.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the energy of those different things makes the volatility different.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, like, the energy of people in New York City makes them kind of like, oh, okay.
Yeah. And there's different, like, cultural things. Like, New York's more of a, like, because it has these other prominent industries, especially, like, financial, that's such a cutthroat thing. And
right.
That's, like, that's your, like, benchmark for how to be is, what's Wall Street doing?
Right.
That's gonna surely have an impact. I forgot where I was going with this whole thing.
You know, we were just talking about the way people are and being in different cities and how they're, how they might react and stuff like that. I think I took us off track discussing, like, the difference between New York and LA. If only just because I always want to defend New York because I'm from Boston, and Boston is an angry, horrible place. It's great that it started the country. It was, like, the early on historical location of where everybody started. Great. Good job on ya. But, like, it's just really, everyone is very rough there. And when I moved to New York, people would always say to me, are they rude? And I was like, it's like a breath of fresh air. It's like the kindest human beings you ever met in your life. And the only difference is that instead of it being, like, spread across this area where everyone's in different suburbs or downtown Boston or whatever, they're all in one 9-mile island. Mm-hmm. So being that physically close to each other causes some, like, emotional, it's like mob mentality.
Uh-huh.
Whereas in L.A., there's lots of different kinds of, you know, there's a bit more space to kind of be who you are. Mm-hmm. And then hopefully that allows you to be a bit friendlier. We're talking about friendly people in L.A. That's where we were.
I'll tell you what. I don't have a lot of concrete career goals going out there. I kind of, to be honest, like, I'm really, a huge factor in going is to, I don't think this podcast will, you know, put me on a list, because I'm probably already on these lists. I kind of just want to go lay eyes on the terrible, how would I describe, I guess secret societies and weird dark occult aspect of the industry.
Oh, okay.
There's a huge part of me that's, like, motivated to go see what's been going on. You know a little bit about my perspective.
Yeah, also LA is just chock full of it. Like wild, occult, murderous, interesting. Like, yeah.
Ritual murders.
Even if you never did any film or TV or anything in LA, you could spend your entire time giving like tours of murderers' mansions or whatever.
Hell yeah. I think I just like, if I just burn out on the entertainment industry, I'll be satisfied if what I do is just go spy on like this building that's said to have a Mars jump room, or this studio that is known to have affiliations with the CIA and breed mind control slaves. Like that's enough. That like piques my curiosity so much that it's like worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it is interesting to find out, because the way we perceive the way Hollywood works, I think, is totally different. In the same way, like, I talk about politics, where I'm like, yeah, it's, you know, Trump just realized what it is he signed himself up for. Mm-hmm. Like, he walked into that White House and the shadow government showed up and was like, listen, this is what's really going to happen. Yeah. It's nice that you said words on a stage, but no one cares what you said, because we're going to do what we want.
That's been happening to everybody since, like, Reagan.
Yes.
Is like, I got a lot of ideas. And then, that's cute.
Yeah, and then they're like, throw those ideas out, because this is what we're actually doing. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Hollywood's the same way, where they're like, this is actually how you have to accomplish it. Yeah. But it'd be interesting. I mean, some of it might be like, oh, this is bullshit, but some of it's like, okay, that's just, what game do I need to play? Like, it's like learning the rules of a game, where you're like, wait, I need to move this way before I can move that way? Okay.
I think there's a lot of players in that game that are just doing it because they're like, oh, this is the rules. I want to be successful here, so this is what I've got to do to, like, navigate this dynamic. And then I think there's a lot of people that are genuinely the worst people.
Yeah.
That control this game and are have like literally malicious intent. If you look anything into like child abuse in Hollywood, it's hard. It's really hard to like to maintain a perspective that the people that run the biz are good-hearted. It's really hard to like have that cognitive dissonance. Of this place is full of monsters, yet has good intentions.
Yeah.
I imagine it's like that room full of people at the end of Rosemary's Baby.
Absolutely. Like
what it is, you know?
Hell yeah.
There's a bunch of like oddly calm, like an eclectic weird mix of just socialites.
Yeah, having like fancy cocktails and like just celebrating this demon baby that just.
Just screaming Hail Satan in the weirdest way.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I mean, Scientology was born there, guys.
Scientology is just goddamn. What a time. Don't come after me, Scientology.
They're focused on Leah Remini right now.
I was in LA 2 years ago with Stephanie Pace, and we were at the end of our sort of towards the end of the whole time we were there, we were staying next to UCB on Franklin. And which is right across the Celebrity Center Scientology building, which is a giant, ornate hotel that was built in 1929, the year of the market crash. But it's like this exquisite building, which has since become the Scientology Celebrity Center. And so the whole time we're like making jokes about it. And then on our last day, we're like, we don't know what to do. We ran out of things. Well, should we go? It says open house. And so we did the open house.
Oh, boy.
Right before, I told Stephanie, like, I'm a real pushover. Like, I have a lot of trouble getting people off my doorstop or off the phone that are asking for money. Just because I don't want to disappoint anybody. So,
fuck that.
So I told Stephanie, I was like, listen, going into this, you've got to get us out of here because I will just join this cult. and she was like, okay, we'll do it. So we go... You go in, like, the front garden gate, which has a giant sign that says open house, which open house in my mind means, like, walk around.
Sure.
So, like, we walk in, we walk over by this fountain in the garden, and immediately this, like, the most cliche, scary groundskeeper approaches us, and he's like, hey, what are you doing? And we're like, oh, we're just looking around. It says open house. And he's like, oh, do you want a tour? And we're like, oh, no, thank you. He's like, well, you have to have a tour if you're going to stay here. So we're like, oh, fuck, okay. Well, how long is it? We end up negotiating doing a tour, and they bring the scary groundskeeper, who's like Jack the Ripper from Last Action Hero, like shuffles us in to the lobby, and there's like a lobby lady that holds us for a while, and then I can see that they send another host to come deal with us, and it's clearly like there was a couple of them standing around. They sent one, and it was clearly like a guy that they thought was stereotypically attractive and, like, would be a good sell for me and Stephanie. Stephanie is also a 20-something hot lady. So they thought, like, oh, we'll send this handsome guy who... He was, like, fine-looking, but it was clearly, like, a very calculated look.
Generically handsome?
Yeah, generically handsome and, like, fake white teeth, gelled hair. Just too much.
Oh, my God.
And so this, like... quotes handsome guy swoops us and he brings us into another room where we have to like fill out a little survey and watch a 10-minute like intro to Scientology video. And the video is like, no joke, the first 3 minutes is different kinds of white blonde women going, I had no idea what Scientology was, and I just walked right in. I just walked right in, and they kept, like, emphasizing that, like, you just walk right in. It's so clean. It's such a clean building. Just nonsense info. And then the handsome host hands us off to the nerdy host, who's, like, our question, like, he's our guide. And this guy takes us on, like, a tour of the posters in the hallway. So he literally just, like, brings us to one poster and goes, all right, this is the tenets of Scientology. You can read as much as you want. And then he stands there with his arms folded in silence. But Stephanie Pace, being who she is, like, actually reads all this info.
Yeah.
And then she's like, well, it says this here, but you
she's
say
a scientist.
This. Yeah, she's a scientist. And she starts, like, poking holes in the fabric of that belief system.
And then she just fell through a hole in the floor.
Yeah, I have not seen her since. I miss her so much. I have not seen her.
She's gone now.
Yeah, R.I.P.
He screams like Donald Sutherland at the end of like Body Snatchers.
Hell yeah. It was... I don't know how I got into that hole, but... Basically, it's trap. Oh, so the little boy that was our guide at the end.
The little boy was it a child?
He was a young 20-something, but he was a boy in that. He was not a man.
He was a boy, yeah. I get it.
But so towards the end, we're like, so why are you into this? He's like, well, you know, I wasn't super into it, and then I took this. They had they hosted a thing on confidence, like a workshop on confidence. So I took that, and I was like, okay, sure. And then he was like, well, then I did like another thing, and then I started getting auditions. And it was clearly like there's a network that will hook it up as soon as you're like on the fringe. If you like, that's how they like. If you watch Going Clear, that's how like Tom Cruise. And John Travolta's career soars. Like, once you get in that club, they will hook it up because it's all around.
I don't know. Both of those guys were pretty popular before they joined Scientology. Scientology wasn't really around. I mean, as far as I was aware of.
Well, Scientology dates back to, like, the 50s.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, it was around. You should watch Going Clear. It's pretty good.
Clearly.
It's like even earlier than that, isn't it? At least in the beginning with like Dianetics and stuff like that.
Oh, well, that's true. Yeah, I guess that's a good point. Actually, I forgot about the fact that it was originated with a sci-fi book. Yeah,
I forgot that. It's crazy. Basically, I want to go to LA to observe and get murdered by all the cults.
Okay, cool. That seems fine.
If I go, that's how I know.
Part of me feels like I want to ask you to start your own podcast to, like, share all the things that you find along the way.
I would love to, but also know that that is exactly how I will die.
Right.
Exactly like Welcome to Nightville.
No, but you don't need to... Okay, what about this? Don't record them. No, don't put them on the internet.
Don't post.
Don't put them on the internet. Just send them to us.
Okay.
And then I'll get my husband to change the voice so it sounds like someone else.
I just want a monster
and then,
voice.
And then we'll put it on the internet and it'll be like an older man who's all like, I went to this really unusual coffee shop the other day and they brought me to the basement. And it's like, oh, okay, great. And perfect. They will never find you.
That sounds great. That's my dream.
You're just going to be, like, filming it, and, like, you're just going to be like, everything's great, and we're just going to realize you're, like, blinking in Morse code all of a sudden.
Please help.
We were talking about having somebody blink in Morse code in a sketch, yeah. And then we were like, how many people in the audience would legitimately know what blinking in Morse code would be, though? I mean, there's a small handful that would even get, if you were like, do you know what Morse code is?
Yeah.
You know.
It'd be tough. That's a tough
detail. It would probably be like an angry vet.
and if the theater has anyone as a prime audience, it's angry vets.
Angry vets, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Primarily who comes to my shows.
Mm-hmm. It probably helps with the PTSD.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, hilarious that that guy went to Scientology for a confidence workshop when there's an improv school directly across the street.
Yeah, just...
You know, you could have gone and taken a class.
You'd have been
they
done.
Also may have helped you with auditions.
Well,
yeah, I mean, take the cheaper cult. Yeah.
Right?
That's true. Improv is a cheaper cult.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they don't make you work out.
It's a more affordable and reasonably priced cult, yeah.
Well, they don't try to promise you that you're going to go to some sort of heaven. There's no, like, improv heaven they're selling to you.
Well, Scientology is amazing. They do such a good job of, like, appropriating tenets of psychology and other kinds of spirituality. So there are so many parts of it that actually work and make sense.
Sure.
But, like, at the end of the day, it's like a fucking pyramid scheme.
Well, that's how cults work, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Is that they're like, well, that seems to make sense. Yeah, so does literally anything.
Yeah,
so does... Like, if you're like, hey, are you on top of a mountain and your friend dies? Yeah, cannibalism sounds super cool at that point, but no, don't do that. Mm-hmm. Ugh. Ugh. It's like, wait, no. Mm-mm. Everything sounds, you know... Mm-hmm. Charles Manson had a great house that he lived in with all of his ladies.
So let me tell you about that.
Tell me about it.
Charles Manson, famous murderer, duh.
I like how you're explaining to the audience as if somehow they don't know who Charles Manson is.
Well, I just finished this book called
Grapes?
Something. Oh, it's in my
he was our now. Guest last week, so I don't know.
We did a phone interview with him from jail.
Good. Yeah. I've watched a lot of interviews with him after reading this book that I just read, and I was like, okay. I was like, you don't seem too crazy.
I see what you're driving at, yeah.
not to, like, defend his whatever, but I think that he's absolutely, not a scapegoat, but, like, a figurehead distraction from what was going on right next to him, which is a bunch of other people that were doing the same things as him as far as, like, cult building, drug-induced manipulation, abuse, and ritual murder. Mm-hmm. There were so many other people doing the exact same thing, like his buddies. He was buds with so many other, like... significant musicians that were like, oh yeah, my buddy Manson, he fucking shreds on guitar, he's really good, I like his music. So he was just
friends
part
with politicians
of
too.
Oh yeah,
and like lawyers and like, mm-hmm. you know, people that were like in major positions in LA.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the book that I read was, I think it's called Weird Scenes Inside the Canyon. It's about Laurel Canyon in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, and how there was this overwhelmingly, like, there's no way you can just, like, write it off to coincidence, number of connections to the military-industrial complex and the CIA, and all these musicians that were affiliated with this, and then also all this, like, huge list of people that died in weird ways right in the scene. Hmm. For example, like, Jim Morrison's dad was the commander of the ship in the Gulf of Tonkin incident, which was what we used to start Vietnam, but was later, like, decided was a false flag situation.
Whoa.
Weird. And then other bands that were just totally manufactured but are treated as, like, rock and roll. I think, like, the Birds, for example, they were highly, what do you call them? They were put together. That was not, like, an organic band. That
like, they were, like, designed. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Menudo.
Oh, yeah.
Menudo. Like a less obvious Monkeys. Yeah.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And the Monkeys come up in this book. You better believe it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's all about that scene and ties to sort of the war machine and all, like Frank Zappa and all these people that are like associated with the hippie scene but are actually like, do not give a fuck about that stuff.
Yeah.
And then also,
as far as it goes, like,
plenty of black
aesthetically,
magic.
Charles Manson. Like, Charles Manson is a he's a perfect scapegoat. I don't know, like, aesthetically and, like, personality, it's like...
Yeah.
Nobody's going to believe him.
Absolutely.
Ever,
and yeah. if you look at his interviews since he's been incarcerated, like, the way he talks about things, he's kind of, like, you can tell that he's, like, he just keeps saying, like, I'm doing my time. I'm here to do, you know, what I got sentenced for. He doesn't seem to... He says he sticks to the fact that he didn't carry out the murders. He got other people to do them.
Sure.
Maybe they were his ideas, but, like, he clearly is just like, well, I'm in the situation, so I'm going to do it. But the monster that we're all afraid of is not in jail.
Right.
Because it's everywhere.
Oh.
Hail, Satan!
Oh, man.
Really put that off the rails. Sorry.
No.
Hey, okay. Like,
I'm into it.
You're my favorite, Kelsey, because like that is the best reason to go to LA. Like, that is actually the only good reason. Like, such an Indiana Jones ass attitude about it.
Yeah. You
know? I'm gonna get got. I want to like publicly declare I would never kill myself. I would never kill myself.
Yeah.
So if I ever die and they're like suicide,
No way.
No way, Jose.
No,
my suicide note would read, "No way, Jose, I didn't do this."
No, it'd be a really, don't worry, it'll be a really weird car accident off a cliff in Laurel Canyon.
Absolutely. R.I.P. Paul.
I don't know what you're talking about.
A lot of people go that way.
I'm not sure what reference you're making.
I'm trying to Fast and Furious. What's his name?
Oh, yeah. What the fuck?
Wendell, what's his name?
Paul Walker. Walker.
Paul Walker. That's Wendell knows.
He got
if
it.
Anybody knows attractive blonde guys. You have his face tattooed on your back?
Yeah, but that was like way before he died. That was like... That was a Christmas present to myself.
Oh, God. Have you ever seen the, speaking of the Charles Manson thing, have you ever seen, there's a television show, and I don't know where it came on. It was just on Netflix, and I watched it with David Duchovny called Aquarius.
I haven't watched it.
Which is like...
Duchovny seems to be, he's a product of the system.
Really?
I mean...
He's generally the, like, central character in a lot of shows that are, like, anti the
Californication
system.
Californication is a fucking...
Oh, yeah, I never watched that show. I was
that
just X-Files
the
and,
epitome
this,
of
and
just,
this Aquarius, no.
I'm not watching Aquarius. But I'm interested
in that. Hey, wait a second. Why would you assume that I knew who Paul Walker was?
Just because you would...
You know, Steph,
would.
I know.
I've never seen a Fast and Furious movie. I'm going to go ahead and just, like, straight up say that.
Well, that's too bad. They're pretty good sometimes.
I haven't seen them either.
They're not
bad.
They're fine.
The only thing I know about the Fast and the Furious is that American Dad episode where they write where the guy writes fan fiction and it turns out to be a porn.
If you're writing Fast and the Furious fanfic, there's only one way to go.
I did see the Tokyo Drift Fast and Furious with the kid from Billy Bob Thornton movie. Sling Blade. I saw that one.
There's
a kid
from
that.
Well.
Yeah.
I don't know what person you're talking about.
It's a good one. Isn't Lil Romeo in that?
I think so. I know I have him tattooed on my back too.
Lil Romeo. Anybody who's got Lil in their name and is a man, like Lil Wayne.
Yeah. He was a young baby when he got the Lil. He was like 9.
Was he? No.
Well, Master P is his dad. So Lil Romeo was his little protege. He got that fucking sick-ass Jackson Brothers sample. That's how you get to the top of the charts. Poor little baby was probably getting abused.
Oh, God.
It's like Lil Bow Wow, like, that was appropriate, and then he dropped it when he got, like, adult size.
Yeah, he got bout. He went to just Bow Wow.
Yeah, nothing says,
and then
I know.
Nothing.
I'm a man now.
Call me Bow Wow.
Bow Wow, you guys.
I had a friend named K-9 one time. I mean, you know.
Ooh,
that's just
real name?
No.
Absolutely not.
No. In fact, we harassed him until he told us his real name, which was Kedrick. We were like, K-9's better.
I didn't know Kedrick was a name.
Sure.
There's a new guy on this tour that I'm on, and he introduced himself to me as Siege, and I was like, and he's like a 50-year-old.
Oh, I know Siege.
Like, really kind of soft.
Is that like CJ?
Like,
I don't know. I've only met him as Siege.
That's what it is.
Okay.
It's CJ. It's short for CJ, but, like, I was, like, I just heard Steve's like Dungeon Siege. I was like, what an aggressive ass nickname.
No, if you befriend him really on Facebook, nice, it's C-E-E-J.
Okay.
He told me how to spell it, and I was like, okay, wow. I thought he was just really shooting for the stars with the nickname he chose.
Oh, like you really thought it was like, he was like, I'm a warrior.
Italian.
Hey, my name's Christopher, but they call me Siege in the Pen, you know, like.
No.
I wish I had like a really tight, intimidating name. But I don't think I'll ever have, like, a cool nickname. All my nicknames are, like, barely derivatives of my real name, which aren't fun. Like, Kels. It's fine. I'll take it. And honestly, Kels is, like, feels more affectionate than my full name, but, you know.
But would it be better if, like, people started calling you, like, Babs or something? Like, it's like...
Babs I would actually be into because I was always a huge fan of the Tiny Toon Summer Vacation movie.
Oh my god, yes.
Throws down. She has like a cool ass Cyndi Lauper solo in the beginning. It's good. I had a Babs onesie costume for like a fourth birthday. It was tight.
I love that. That's so wonderful. Oh, Babs. Just introduce yourself to people as Babs when you go to LA.
That might work for me.
Because you're, I didn't know your last name forever because your Facebook name was a different name. Yeah.
I fucked with it.
So why not? Why the fuck not? When you go there.
Yeah, I'll just say anything.
Because your professional name can be whatever you want your professional name is, but if you're like, hi, I'm Babs.
Yeah.
We'll call you that forever.
So do you think all rabbits in the Warner Brothers animated universe have the last name Bunny, or is Bugs Bunny just like a shitty illegitimate father across like all of like Looney Tunes town?
I bet Bugs is the father of all the bunnies in that universe, mm-hmm. and he is probably a shitty dad.
Mm-hmm.
He's too busy partying, like, turning up to carrots, going to the opera. Yeah, too much. He's always at the opera.
Get the hell out of the opera.
And then, but like their name should be Bunny, right? Because
that's what they are.
Yeah, I guess.
If you've watched Animaniacs lately,
as far as
go ahead.
Well, no, I was just gonna say it's just confusing for all the animals to just all have the name, their last name just be what they are.
It just says what animal they are.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, technically, holding. Winnie is called Winnie the Pooh. He's a Pooh.
Well, that's Disney. Stop it, Amy.
That's
we're talking
true.
About what the
I'm so sorry.
Are. What if we were all people and it was just like Amy the White?
Or it was like Amy
like
Girl.
A wizard. That just sounds like she's a wizard now.
Oh, that does.
Amy that's the White. That's how I'm getting into it now. Except
like
where it sounds
elevated.
Super racist, like I'm also in the KKK.
Oh. You're a white wizard. Oh no!
Oh no! This went horribly wrong.
I didn't know.
That's like an extra level of racism. Where it's like, not only looking at me do you know, but I just need you, I need all deaf or blind people to know. I'm Wendell the White.
I'm real curious about, KKK culture. It's like you're a grand wizard. Where's the wizard part come from? Do they practice black magic? I wouldn't be surprised if they did because they seem like assholes.
Sure.
Or they are assholes.
No, they.
But
there
the wizard
there were,
aspect.
Sort of like pagan cults attached, like pagan rituals attached to it. Think,
they
right?
seem too much of. Like they would seem too afraid. And I say that from the bully perspective of like. They would never do magic because they'd be too afraid it would work.
Well, I think maybe, like, assuming, like, using a magical title might, like, strike fear in the heart of other people. Like,
yeah.
It might make people think that there's sort of, like, mystical.
Like, I'm Grandmaster Murder.
Yeah, or Grandmaster Funk. That is Grandmaster Murder. That's your other nickname.
I'll just introduce myself as that.
Hi, I'm Babs, aka Grandmaster Murder.
I will climb the scene there in no time.
Now I want you to have like a jean jacket with like ghetto letters in the back that just says Grandmaster Murder.
Sounds great. I need to get some old English tattoos.
Yeah.
ASAP.
Why is your chest
you
not covered
that
with them?
You go try to join.
Oh,
you're
God.
Trying to join Scientology with that jacket on.
Oh.
I will only join Scientology if you'll call me Grandmaster Murder.
They'll be like, no.
I don't know. There's like a lot of racist hate groups that use weird kind of like mystical sort of names. Like, there's a biker gang named the Warlocks that are pretty intense, and like the Hell's Angels.
So Warlocks and Wizards, like, those are people that use magic for evil. So magic exists, guys. Hate to break it to you. It's real. But the people that use it for nefarious purposes, that's when they become wizards and warlocks.
Yeah.
And I don't think that Harry Potter's a dark occultist. I do think that J.K. Rowling was highly aware of the fact that these things exist, but that was just like shorthand. But I don't fucking know where I'm going.
I don't think J.K. Rowling had intentions of making it bad in any way.
She's clearly highly aware of the occult, like the symbols. She hits on all this stuff that is.
Yeah, but she totally connected. Like she connected with kids in a way. Most of the lessons of the book are just general, like, be good to each other lessons. So like, really, she just used the world. Maybe she knew a lot about it, and then just used that world she knew a lot about to create this kids' book that, like, you know, friggin' pulled her right out of poverty and made her a kajillionaire who people actually give a shit what she thinks now.
It's impressive. And they always compared.
Well, I mean, that also, like, sort of added perspective, like the monster side of it, and that kind of like kickstarted a thing with, like, I don't know, like the Twilight series, or, you know, like all of a sudden vampires are sexy.
Vampires,
like, we empathize with
exist.
Vampires.
And Twilight series is garbage propaganda to make vampires sexy and to just cause teenage girls to have terrible perceptions of how to be a person. Vampires do exist. People do drink blood.
Oh, I definitely knew they do.
They Pharrell drinks blood. I'll say it. They do, and that, like, making vampires sexy is not old, not new. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry.
Very
it's
old.
Just like, it's all over the place. So that is theoretically the fountain of youth is drinking baby's blood.
I watched a movie recently where, you know, somebody, it was like way back in the 1800s or whatever, and they're like, there was a guy who who ate, like, was a cannibal and ate another soldier. First it was because he was out in the like
terrible,
he got stranded and the guy died and he didn't know how to save himself. But then once he ate the guy, he got the power of him. And it goes really crazy. So it gets real mystical after he acknowledges that he got this power, and it gets really wild and mystical.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, wow. And, like, there are a couple of Native American characters who essentially, like, corroborate, like, this is a true situation. Like, you can't consume another person or you take their soul. And
that's part of the... That's one of the issues with meat consumption in general is that you're consuming the life essence of this creature. And so... not necessarily that, like, it's bad to eat meat and ever, but eating factory farmed animals who are kept in isolation and miserable their entire lives, and you're eating their, like, fear chemicals and eating their sadness, like, that's why people are all shitty all the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know. Just this is the worst, like, genre to get me opened up on.
No, we had. No, we're actually wrapping up because we had 1 hour, and we've gotten to the end of the hour. But no, we started out with some really solid, like, theater talk, some really serious like career soul searching.
Yeah,
you told us
topic.
Some great stuff. So, and then I really like this, like, you know, the darkness of LA and all that stuff. And Wendell and I support your journey and are excited.
Well, that's a very interesting. Like, I'm glad that we went down that road, because I feel like we talked to several people that are going to LA, and the conversation did not get as fun after that.
If you ever need to talk about the dark occult, I'm ready.
Yeah, plus...
Yeah, I hate that you and I have not hung out more, Kelsey, because this is the kind of shit that I...
Right?
My brain is exploding with.
I'll send a few more weeks. Yeah, for sure. I was like, do send us links, because I will link them to this podcast.
Pray for Kanye. He's being reprogrammed right now.
What does he need to be reprogrammed for? His ego is killing him.
He was popping off on the occult. They can't have that, so they gotta repurpose his brain or kill him and replace him with a clone. He's too unwieldy. I'm just saying.
Oh, that's why they married him off to Kim Kardashian. She'll keep him tight.
Yeah.
How do we know that he's not, like, the first clone?
We don't know.
Like, he died in that car accident.
He might have.
He died in that car accident, and they made a new Kanye, and that's
Wendell's got the right mindset.
Yeah, 100%. Like, yeah. All that shit, like, all that, yeah, like, and they even capitalized on him accidentally surviving or whatever.
Yeah.
Are we sure Kanye's not just Tupac, just reincarnated?
Tupac is...
Yes.
Yes. How old would Tupac be if he were alive right now? How old would Tupac...
He was 25 when he died, so he'd be 40-something.
Oh, okay.
96 or 90...
Okay, so he'd be in his 40s.
He'd be a hot 40-something.
Sure, absolutely. Definitely. Who knows? Depends on how many drugs he did and how many more parts of his face he
tattooed. Fine. When he was like coming out of jail, he was talking about how the police is a gang and like all these systems work as gangs and then bye.
Yeah, they don't like that.
They don't like
They're
that.
They're not into it.
They don't want to hear it.
Definitely not.
Hey, I'm really happy to record my last podcast.
This is the last thing that Kelsey ever says. No, it's okay. We get some dark arts backing us up most of the time. We're good. Any final thoughts, Wendell, as we say goodbye?
Only that I feel like we were all just bullshitting just now, but I do, like, I'm thinking about how Tupac liked to call himself Machiavelli, and I'm not, like, 100% certain that he's not the one doing all of this. Now I gotta go get a cork board and some red string. And I got
you
a
need
whole
red
fucking,
string.
Like, night ahead of me, you know? Yeah. It was really nice talking to you before you took off, Kelsey.
Yeah, thank you, Wendell.
Toilet. Yeah, absolutely. This has been a great conversation for sure. Definitely, it went off the rails of what I expected, but I'm so psyched about all of it. I think it should be really interesting. And
anytime, dude. Thank you for having me. This is a treat. I know this podcast is ideally about creativity, and
it's okay.
We touched on it. But you know what? Like I said, creativity is God's source, and evil and the devil is the enemy of that. So
I actually think that the podcast is really just about the people who are creative, and we just talk to each person about their life. And sometimes it's about their career goals, and sometimes it's just about stuff that they dig. And either way, it's good with me.
Right on.
I dig it.
Absolutely.
This is so great.
Yeah.
All right, thanks, Kelsey. Really appreciate it.
What a treat. Yeah. Thank you, guys.
Thanks for listening to Yes But Why Podcast.